Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire. Y'all, presumably still y'all, all are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. Whew. A little warm in the shop today, boy. About 90 degrees in here. But I think maybe it'll get better. It's getting dark outside. It's Saturday evening. Probably should have recorded this last night, but man, I wasn't feeling good last night. And to be honest with you, I still ain't feeling good today. I did go to the gym and get a good workout in, but thing kind of runs in the family. Me and my dad both get these intestinal blockages from time to time, and I think maybe I got one starting. I hope not, but he used to have to get hospitalized over his. Now, I ain't never had to be hospitalized over one, but I don't want to be. So, drinking lots of water, trying to get my system going, whatever's happening with it right now, but I think it's just a symptom of Crohn's disease. Hope you guys are doing good today. It's not been a bad Saturday. Played a bunch of Minecraft with my kid, and that's always fun when he lets me play with him. Yesterday, my neighbor James, y'all heard me talk about old James. James is a good old egg. James has been building race cars since time began. I think James might have been at the first drag race. I don't know. Not 100% sure how old he is, but James has a slew of equipment, all kind of neat stuff. And one of the things he has is a little New Holland tractor with a front end loader on it. And I got that big old, the stump from the general, big old pecan tree in my backyard that fell. And then I pulled a bunch of trees to make room for mom's Volkswagen. I want to get it down here. And, I just had a brush pile about big as half the house, a good sized brush pile. He brung his tractor over and let me borrow his tractor to move that brush pile and work on that tree stump some. And boy, I just had a good old time. There's not as many things as fun as running a decent sized piece of equipment. Maybe you're different, but I always enjoy it. When I had my own company, I always enjoyed it. I've enjoyed all the jobs I ever had where I got to run some equipment. And you know, I've run a slew of different stuff in my life, but that little tractor with that front end loader on it was just a ball. I had a good time. I got a low spot out there on the back part of the property and decided all around that pecan tree was all humped up, you know. And so I leveled that whole area out and then took all that dirt and took it to that low spot and packed it in there and everything. And hopefully it's going to alleviate some of the, I have a pool of water that likes to sit there after we get a bunch of rain. This is Houston, so we always get a bunch of rain. Anyways, that's what's going on in my life. Hope you guys are doing well. Like I said, I forgot to start my timer, so that's awesome sauce. Batting 1,000. Man, let's get into, I want to tell you guys we got some merch. For the Wrecking Yard, we got some new shirts and stuff, and I'll put a link up right here to that, to my Bonfire store, where if you want to get you some Wrecking Yard merch. Also, if you just search Jerry Wayne Longmire, and like just type in Linktree and Jerry Wayne Longmire, and it'll take you to my Linktree, and it has all my links, including a link to my merch store. And I got all kind of merch for Shop Talk and Truck Astrology, but now we got some The Wrecking Yard merch, you know, a little trip merch. So excited about that. And if you would buy some, that would be fantastic too. I'm trying to make sure I got enough money for this big Colorado trip I'm about to take my family on. And we're doing some shows up there, so hopefully that'll offset the cost too. But you just never know. That's always a gamble, you know, doing shows out of state. Always a gamble. So everybody always, man, come here, come here, come here. I gotta find a way to make it economically feasible, my friend. I want to go everywhere. I'm a traveling man. Always have been, and enjoy it. Let's thank our sponsor for bringing the Wrecking Yard to fruition today. Our good buddies over at Jake's Quality Repair LLC up there in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Jake's is your go-to family-owned semi-truck and trailer repair shop that offers roadside service calls for the trucker in need. Got blowouts? Called Jake's. Trailer damage? Called Jake's. Driving a Volvo? Called Jake's. It's still going to be a Volvo, but he can fix other stuff. I never get tired of that joke. Need a career change? Called Jake's. He also sells and services snow plows. He can have you out in these streets pushing that frozen white gold in no time. They also offer all manner of auto repair for all makes and sizes and custom hot rod work too. Check out his Facebook page at Jake's Quality Repair LLC for more information or contact the man himself at 715-384-6699. Jake's Quality Repair LLC for your Central Wisconsin automotive needs. If you're a truck driver running through Central Wisconsin, you just need one number, 715-384-6699. All right, boy, got through it without screwing it up today. Look at that. Fourth, fifth time's a charm. Jake's is our only sponsor this week. And y'all see sponsors drop in and out, and that's because we just sell like month-long sponsor programs. We're not trying to rope anybody into long-term. Everyone Racers podcast, they just stuck around that long because they wanted to. And sometimes sponsors stick around longer. Sometimes they don't. It's all good. But if you... are interested in some sponsorship opportunities, please do not hesitate to reach out to us at jwlcomedy@gmail.com. If you want to send anything to the Wrecking Yard, jwlcomedy@gmail.com. This is going to be an interesting episode today. I took a lot of notes. The S10, this story is about an 84 S10, and it's really not. You know, none of my stories are ever really about one thing, but it's for me. I've owned a bunch of little S10s, you know. I've had a mess of them. I think most of us have had one or two at some point in our life, if you're my age or older, or you have at least worked on one. It's hard to miss them or the Ranger, one of the two, or even the Love trucks, you know. Many trucks were a vital part of this nation's economy, and I think we've all been exposed to them. But when I think of S10, predominantly the first generation S10, when I think of the first generation S10, which is what, 81 to 93, that's the little boxy body. I hear people call them square body S10s. I just can't. That's not right. That's one of my pet peeves. It's not. It's just... Just first generation S10. When I think of first generation S10, I don't think of any of the ones I owned. I always think of my Uncle Stanley and his little blue 84 S10. He is the person I think when I see an S10, I think about him. And we're going to talk about him. We haven't talked about him a whole lot. I've brought him up here and there. Honestly, it's kind of a sensitive subject. But you'll see. We'll get off into it. But to talk about the S10, we have to talk about something else first. We have to talk about what caused the S10. You know, we all know the fuel embargo and all that stuff that happened in the 70s. We talk about that a lot because it was a momentous occasion in that it shifted the way cars were designed in this country. It shifted everything. It shifted everything about what was popular, what sold, all that stuff. It changed the way we looked at automobile manufacturing in this country. It had to. It was such a big situation when it occurred. And like many things, that's where the mini trucks, that's where the popularity come from. You know, these things, they popped out. That's when it really started happening. That's when we started seeing mass import of little pickups like that. And one of the first ones, and one of the most popular ones brought in by an American company, was called Chevy Love Truck. And the Chevy Love Truck was just a rebadged Isuzu Faster. That was the name of the pickup, Isuzu Faster. But it was through and through a little Isuzu pickup with Chevrolet badging on it. Great little trucks. I love Chevy Love Trucks. I have a deep affection for them little pickups. I've just always enjoyed them. I've had one for a very brief period of time, but I've had several friends and cousins that had them when I was growing up. And I think even my dad might have had one for a little bit. My Papa Clark had a handful of them in the Wrecking Yard because he liked weird little oddities, and he liked those little pickups. I actually a while back saw a Isuzu Faster, an actual Isuzu Faster that was badged as such, and I was so blown away by it. And it was in traffic, and I kept trying to get a good picture of it, and I never could get a good picture of it. But they were neat little stout pickups. Here's what killed them. God, this is a weird thing. We're going to talk about, I think we've discussed it a few times before, but the chicken tax. And some of you that are my age and older, you know what the chicken tax is. But I think that word gets thrown around. So it's one of those things that gets thrown around so much, people don't really know what actually happened anymore. And I'm just going to give you a brief rundown. But basically, post-World War II, thanks to industrial farming, sorry, my hearing aids are coming out. If I make too many big facial expressions, they start working themselves out. I got these little locks that usually hold them in, but I'm out of them right now. Chicken tax. Boy, I'm off kilter. Basically, post-World War II, the United States had figured out through industrial farming practices how to keep the chickens flowing. Boy, we was pumping chickens out, right? And then by the early 60s, America had figured out how to turn chickens into fast food. Thanks to industrial farming, U.S. poultry was cheap, abundant, and practically raining from the sky. You couldn't go 10 square miles in the country without seeing some kind of big-ass chicken farm operation. So what we do when we got too much of anything, we start exporting it to other countries. In the first place we started taking it was to Europe. Because, man, who don't like a good chicken wing? It's like Cat Williams said, you know, chicken's a gift from God because it can't fly and it tastes delicious. That bird is loved everywhere on the planet. Turns out, Europe didn't like it. Chicken was still a classy, kind of white tablecloth delicacy over there. And suddenly, the markets in Europe were flooded with bargain bin drumsticks, thanks to Uncle Sam. The French were horrified. The Dutch accused us of dumping chicken stock. German farmers accused us of selling arsenic-soaked chicken, which we may have been. Wouldn't be the first time the United States had done something like that. France even went so far as to claim that our hormone-laced chicken could hurt male virility, trying to get their population not to eat cheap American chicken. Nothing says the lunacy of our nation's history like a testosterone crisis over poultry. That is a... So Europe was pissed, right? So they slapped tariffs on U.S. chicken. All the European countries slapped tariffs on U.S. chicken. Germany, France, England, they're mad as hell. And America, in true American fashion, was pissed off. We ain't gonna body shame our chickens. We retaliated. Enter President Lyndon B. Johnson, armed with a pen and a plan. And apparently a tape recorder recording every shady deal he made. So December 1963, LBJ signs Proclamation 3564, slapping a 25% tariff on potato starch, brandy, dextrin, and plot twist, light trucks. Now why? Isn't that weird? None of those things have anything to do with automotive manufacturing. None of those things. But for whatever reason, light trucks were included in that. And then the reason is because it had absolutely nothing to do with chickens and everything to do with politics, which we now know because Johnson literally recorded himself making the deal. This dude, I've never met anybody more incriminated themselves more. There's tapes where LBJ is heard trying to cut a deal with United Auto Workers President Walter Rother. Is it Rother? It's R-E-U-T-H-E-R. Walter was upset because Volkswagen microbuses and these little import trucks were stealing jobs from U.S. auto workers. People weren't buying full-size pickups anymore. Everybody was in a rush to buy these little pickups. And then Chevrolet and all these companies, and Ford did it too, Chrysler teamed up with Mitsubishi. All these companies had decided to bring in these little mini trucks that weren't being built by American workers. U.S. auto workers weren't getting a cut of that. What old Walter and LBJ cooked up is Walter would offer UAW union support for Johnson's civil rights platform and a strike delay in exchange for a little Volkswagen problem solving. And Johnson, ever the multitasker, nuked Europe's chicken and Germany's truck exports in one executive order. Chicken tax obliterated imported small trucks. VW vans gone. Japanese pickups evaporated. Tariffs were so high on them, people weren't rushing to buy them anymore. Detroit, meanwhile, kicked back with a cigar and enjoyed decades of market dominance while foreign automakers started trying to sneak trucks in. And U.S. automakers did it too, sneaking trucks in the country disguised as passenger vans that the seats were just duct taped in. They tried kits, bringing vehicles in. That's what they did with the Chevy Love truck. They were shipping the Chevy Love trucks here, not completely assembled, so that they would be assembled here, like an IKEA truck. Cars with back seats, just kind of stuck in the back, cargo bed style vehicles with stuff just stuck in the back. Kicker on all this is chicken tax is still alive 30, 60 years later, plucking away in the background of your car buying decisions, all because Europe was mad about us selling cheap chicken, and LBJ needed union support more than he needed Volkswagen vans and buses. So it's a little more complicated than that, but that's just the rundown for me. Thank you, LBJ. It says presidential legacy like a hormone-fueled trade war and a secret truck tax. And that's eventually, it's one of the coffin nails that ends up hurting the small pickups. CAFE regulations, of course, play a big part in that as well. But GM could take this, you know, like I said, after the 1973 Arab oil embargo, you know, Americans suddenly woke up and realized gas wasn't going to be cheap forever. And trying to, people in smaller, thriftier, utility vehicles, things that got better gas mileage. General Motors being one of the big three, not wanting to be left out of the compact party, rolled out the Chevrolet Love in 1972. Love stood for light utility vehicle, but all of a sudden, the Love trucks had a 25% tariff put on them. Because we had poultry-based political revenge going on. So GM's clever solution was to ship the trucks over in pieces like a jigsaw puzzle to dodge the tariff. So I could just imagine being an American auto worker and opening a box full of Chevy Love parts with Japanese instructions. Good luck, brother. Let's start cobbling together. GM wasn't making very much money doing that. It would still cost them a lot of money to assemble the trucks over here. They got tired of playing import Tetris and decided that the way they would get around the chicken tax is that they would partner up with the Isuzu and build their own compact truck here on home turf, free from chicken-based taxation and customs puzzles. Thus was born the S-Series pickup, launched in 1981 as a 1982 model. And when they built the S10, they scavenged parts from just about every other GM car, a lot of G-body intermediates like the Monte Carlo. And it had a, what was the frame width based off of? I should have made a note about that, but I didn't. Damn. It had the same frame width as something else, and I can't remember for the life of me what that is. But they cobbled together a tough little truck, a tough little pickup that Americans finally call their own. first S-Series trucks, of course, came with a 1.9 Isuzu engine. And then they also offered the 2.8 V6, which is not a great engine. But it was available if you wanted a little more gusto in your mini truck. In 1983, they added an extended cab. They called it the Maxi Cab. Or if it was a GMC, it was called a Club Coupe. They also introduced a four-wheel drive system called Instatrak, which is a snazzy name for four-wheel drive. I like it. Instatrak. I think they should bring that one back. I bet Instatrak would be less problematic than Stabilitrak. Sorry, I'm still fighting the Cadillac Stabilitrak right now, and I'm mad as hell. I got to spend about $700 on that Cadillac in my driveway right now, and I'm not happy about it. The ABS module is part of the problem, and that's and it's not. You can't just go buy an ABS module and put it in there. You got to get an ABS module, and then you got to get it programmed. It's just a big. And everything costs a little more money. So you got to buy the module. And if you want to buy a genuine GM module, then about $400. And then you got to pay some fellow with a laptop another $200 to program it, flash it for you, or it'll turn off all the damn lights in that car. Anyways, so they had a four-wheel drive system called Instatrak. Then they introduced the S10 Blazer and the S15 Jimny, which is the GMC version. Those hit the market in 83. They beat Ford and Jeep to the compact SUV punch. They beat Ford to the small truck punch. The S10 beat the Ranger, the small Ranger, not the trim package. Then they, I think they had one called an Oldsmobile Bravada, too. Is it the Bravada? I think so. It's an Oldsmobile Bravada. It's like a little SUV looking. It was basically a S10. Anyways, throughout the 80s, the S-Series trucks saw new engines, suspension upgrades, anti-lock brakes by 89. 88, I think they added the 4.3-liter V6. They got rid of the 1.9 Isuzu, and they went to the little Pontiac 2.5 Iron Duke, which we all know and love. It's a tough-ass little engine. That's what my Uncle Stanley had in his. He had that little 2.5. four-cylinder it is. Just a little five-speed. Just a little base model S10. Roll-up winders. It works. Anyways, bottom line is what started as a workaround for the chicken tax, import tax, turned into a full-blown, domestically built compact truck line that helped GM stay relevant in a post-oil crisis world. The S-Series was not flashy, but it was clever, practical, and just quirky enough to be cool for a little while. They were good little pickups. I'm not I get grief sometimes because I make fun of them a lot in truck astrology, and I'm not a Typhoon or a Cyclone. So the Cyclone was that crazy little performance model they made out of a 91, and then they took the GMC S15, the thing, what the hell is that thing called? I just said it a while ago. The Jimny. And they made a Typhoon out of it, which is a little performance model. They're fast. They're incredibly cool. They're incredibly awesome. I'm just not a fan of them. I don't find myself drawn to them. I don't know if it's because S10s were just something I had when I had to have something and I didn't have a lot of love for them. Or if it's just, it just doesn't appeal to me. I'm not a big Ford Ranger guy either. You know, everybody loves Ford Rangers. And I'm not, I think personally, I always like the Mitsubishi Dodge models of that. Even though I give Dodge a lot of crap, I like the little Mighty Max pickups. I like the little Mazda pickups with the V2200. I just not as big a fan of the Ranger and the S10 as people seem to be these days. They've enjoyed a wild uptick in popularity in recent years. the Ford Ranger guy making the little song, and everybody lost their mind about the Ford Ranger. And to me, those were just little crap trucks that we just used to do jobs that we could do with them. They just weren't, they were every, you know, Uncle Bobby loved them. He just went through them because they were perfect for what he did, working on them hot tubs and delivering hot tubs. They were perfect for that job. But it wasn't something that like ever appealed to me like, oh, I got to have me one of them. It was never that. Every time I owned one, it was mostly an accident or just a fix for a situation at the time. It was never like, oh, I got to get me an S10, which is the thing now, which is weird to me. It's a the appeal of 80s vehicles now baffles me. And I know it's just my age throwing me off. I know it's just because I'm of an age that those were the crappy. We didn't like them. We wanted the older stuff than that. You know, those guys that were car guys when I was growing up, we didn't, nobody was dreaming about an 85 S10. We wanted a 65 C series, you know, or a 55 3100, something like that. Nobody I knew was dreaming those trucks. So it's really weird to me now. It's something I have to like kind of come to terms with, you know. And I give them some grief, but they're solid little pickups. I'll tell you that. I wouldn't say unkillable, but takes a lot. It takes a lot to just really destroy a little S10. You have to really just be intent on not doing anything to help that little pickup and running it into the ground. And every time, like I said, every time I see one, I think about my Uncle Stanley because he had a little 84 blue STN. And I think maybe it was the only one in Kilgore because when I saw it, I knew he was someplace. You know, most often I saw it at his job or I saw it at my Meemaw and Papaw's house. I'd drive by and he'd be in the driveway. I knew he was there. He had that truck for a long, long time. He did not get rid of that truck. In fact, until my Papa Longmire got him a new arrow nose Ford, like a mid-90s Ford, sometime in the very, very, I think it was right after my Meemaw passed, and he got his lawsuit settlement. He went out and bought him a new truck. And he gave Uncle Stanley his old brick nose. He had this green and tan brick nose Ford. My papa was a Ford man. Ford is Ford ever Forded. And he gave my Uncle Stanley his old green and tan brick nose pickup. And I really think, I'm not 100% sure if I'm remembering this right, but I really think that that little blue S10 went to Florida with my Uncle Gary. It's my dad's, one of my dad's other brothers. Uncle Gary was Navy SEAL before there was Navy SEALs. It's called UDT, Underwater Demolition Team, Vietnam. He was a tough old bird, career, Navy, all his life. Then went into Merchant Marines. Retired from the Navy as a commissioned officer. Had a pretty stellar career. And I think his oldest son ended up with that S10. I think that was my cousin Dominic's first vehicle, if I remember right. Uncle Stanley used to spend a lot of time. He would go out there and stay with my Uncle Gary and my Aunt Paula a lot. He would go out. They lived in Jacksonville, Florida, close to the Naval Base in Mayport. And he would go out there and he would stay with them. My Uncle Stanley's full name was James Stanley Longmire. He was born in 1942 in Enville, Tennessee. My dad was born in Texas in May of 54. So that means Uncle Stanley would have been about, I'm guessing he was probably about 13, 14 years old when my dad was born, which is about the same age gap between me and my Uncle Bobby. So all the stories my dad told, my dad just loved his brother Stanley. He loved him dearly. drove him crazy at times, but he loved him dearly. And all my life, I heard stories about all the things Stanley did. Stanley just looked after my dad, you know, and he looked after my dad's little brother, my Uncle Terry, who's sadly passed on as well. My dad's the last one left of his brothers. All the rest of his brothers have passed on, which has got to be horrible. I don't have a lot of siblings, so I don't know what it's like to lose that, but it's got to be a tough road when you grow up. And his other brothers, Larry, my Uncle Larry and my Uncle Kerry were also quite a bit older than him. They're closer to Stanley in age. And his sister was quite a bit older than him. Him and Terry were kind of the baby. They were the last two. But Stanley stayed home. Uncle Gary went off to the Navy. Uncle Larry went off to the Army in Vietnam. And left them home, you know, to deal with my Papa Longmire, who was a, yeah, I loved him, but he's a flawed man. You know, the thing with family and all these stories is these stories just get passed down. You hear these stories from your dad and from your uncle and from your papa. You hear different versions of these stories over the years. So most of the time when I'm telling you these things, I'm just really relating what I received secondhand from my father and my uncles. And the problem is, or the problem gets to be at some point, is all the people you can ask about the truth are gone and took it with them. So a lot of what I'm going to tell you today about my Uncle Stanley is based on my knowledge of him during my life and stuff my dad told me over the years. The James thing is kind of funny. So my Uncle Stanley was named James Stanley because he was named after my papa. Except my papa's name, boy, this is wild. So my papa, his father's name was John Thomas Longmire. He was a farmer up in Tennessee, up Humboldt, Tennessee. My papa was his oldest son. He had a twin brother named Carl, and my papa was named John after John Thomas. When he was a baby, his name was John Edward. And I don't remember what Carl's middle name was, but I think Carl was maybe named after one of John Thomas's brothers, but I'm not 100% sure on that. Like I said, all the people I could ask about this are gone, you know, besides my dad. And, you know, some of those answers he doesn't even have. Carl was killed in World War II when him and my papa went to World War II. The day Papa Longmire took a 50 cal on his back and ended up in the Army hospital. Carl was killed that same day. Same day my papa was awarded a Purple Heart for, his twin brother was killed in battle. It's a lot for a man to go through, right? It's no secret we know now that World War II fighters came back. They called PTSD shell shock back then. But those guys had seen some horrors. World War II was bloody. I mean, you don't need me to tell you. Just go read any history about it or watch a movie, whatever you want to do. But it was bloody. A lot of men died. A lot of families did not get their sons and fathers, brothers on. And that was the case with my Papa Loma. He lost his twin brother. Couldn't even go to the funeral because he had a 50 cal bullet lodged in his back. Now, when Papa Longmire was young, maybe 5 or 6 years old, maybe younger than that, his mother died. When his mother died, his father, John Thomas, married a 16-year-old girl named Velma. And Velma was a very jealous, angry, young, little hormonal teenage girl, if they can be. And Velma wanted her son to be named after John. She didn't want this other child coming before her child. So when her first son was born. So what she did was when Papa was very little, she started calling him James. And she called him James so much that she convinced him his name was James Edward Longmire. So much so that years later, when Papa married my Meemaw, before he went off to World War II, he married her as James Edward Longmire. And then when he got into the Army did some dig around, found his birth certificate and birth records, and found out his name wasn't James at all. His name was John Edward Longmire. So when he came home on leave, he had to marry Meemaw again as John Edward Longmire. The problem is Uncle Stanley was already born. He was named James Stanley. He was named James after his daddy. It turns out his name was never James at all. His name was John. Ooh, Appalachia, right? All right. So my papa used to brag about that all the time. I remember at the 50th wedding anniversary, he pulled this picture out of me and my Meemaw, of him and his, my Meemaw, and he said he loved her so much he married her twice. But it was basically because the marriage wasn't recognized and he had to go get it married to her in the right name. Of course, he had to redo all his military paperwork, all that good stuff. But my Uncle Stanley was different. He was different probably than a lot of kids in that time period. And I've heard, you know, various stories about, if y'all pardon me, I actually got to fix this daggum weed eater. I screwed up. But Uncle Stanley was different. And I've heard the prevailing story I've always heard was that when my Uncle Stanley was 2 years old, he fell off the back of a pickup and hit his head really hard. And according to the family lore, he didn't speak until he was about five or six years old, which is generally, you know, nowadays considered late development. And it was always sort of chalked up to him hitting his head on this truck at a young age is what causes him bopping his head is what caused the speech to be delayed, yada, yada, yada. And that's why he didn't talk to whenever. And they sort of, you know, all my life, I just always heard that was sort of what happened with him. But he had real bad hearing problems. He couldn't hear. In fact, he always wanted to. My Papa Longmire was an over-the-road truck driver for many, many years. And Uncle Stanley wanted to be a truck driver very badly. And I think if I remember right, the story goes was that he could not pass the hearing test necessary to get him a CDL. But I remember he was pretty deaf. And I don't know if it was just they didn't have the insurance to get him hearing aids or what have you. But I can't remember if he ever had any hearing aids. But he couldn't hear to save his life. But there were other things, you know. He didn't talk much. And a lot of what he did when he did talk was he repeated things he heard other people say. All right, get that done.
A little thing to worry about there.
Got to finish off my weed. That'll be fine. Got to finish off my weed eating tomorrow. I want to get that done while I was out here. there were lots of things he didn't like. He didn't like to physically be touched. He had a lot of little quirks. Really good at assembling things and taking things apart. And my Meemaw was a fundamental Pentecostal, very, very religious. And when the school tried to tell her that there was something wrong with Uncle Stanley and that he needed to be in what they called special ed back then, she did not take that laying down. She wasn't going to have anybody tell her there was something wrong with her baby. And she worked with him on his reading and worked with him on his writing and worked with him on everything she could help teach him to keep him going through school without getting him put in special ed, because she just wasn't going to have that. She wasn't going to, nobody was going to tell her that the Lord gave her an imperfect baby or whatever it is people thought at the time. She just wasn't going to have people thinking that. She wasn't going to let anybody tell her there's something wrong with her baby boy. But when I was a kid, I never thought nothing about it. I just thought Uncle Stanley was kind of weird. He was just kind of silly. He was silly with us kids. We liked him. You know, as far as I know, all my cousins just loved him. He always got really cool gifts for us. He was just a neat dude. We just liked him. But he was funny. He would do funny stuff, man. My Aunt Barbara, I may have told y'all this story before, but my Aunt Barbara was a baker and everything for the college, and she did catering, all kinds of stuff. And I remember she had made this beautiful cake, and Uncle Stanley was just sitting there at her kitchen counter while she was doing all the icing on this cake. And she got done. Uncle Stanley just, and he was a grown ass man. He was in his 40s or 50s when he did this. He just took his thumb and jabbed it down in the middle of that cake, pulled it out, and started eating cake off his thumb. Aunt Barbara lost her mind, but we thought it was the funniest thing we'd ever seen in our life, all as kids. I mean, every one of us wished we had the balls to do something like that. And all I really knew of when they was kids, the thing I did know was that my dad just loved Uncle Stanley. See, my papa Longmire, he wasn't like this to us grandkids. But when he was a younger man, he was very violent. He was an abusive, angry man. I've talked about it. He came back from the war a little screwed up. And there just wasn't the kind of help still people come back more screwed up, right? And there's a lot more help available now and a lot more understanding now than there was back then. Arguably still not enough. But if you can imagine back then, it was even worse. You know, suck it up, be a man. Get over it. Suck it up. Be a man. Go shoot something. You'll feel better. It was that kind of stuff. And Papa, just from the stories and the lore that I know, my dad that is, you know, more vulnerable moments and stuff I heard from my uncles and my aunt growing up. My aunt told me stories. My Aunt Linda's told me stories about him. He was violent. He was mean to Meemaw. He was mean to them kids. He was hard on them kids. Uncle Stanley was a big old dude, though. And my papa called him Dummy about as long as I can remember. He would call him a dummy, and Uncle Stanley would still be over there every day hanging out with them, eating lunch. Uncle Stanley lived with them the longest. But what Uncle Stanley did was, you know, he was 13 years older than my dad, and when he could insert himself in the situation, he protected my dad and his little brother from Papa's wrath. He was always doing his best to save them, sticking, you know, just getting there and do something. Stop Papa from just going crazy on him. Papa would come back from those truck trips and he'd just be angry and he'd take it out on his family. Uncle Stanley would step in. That's the stories my dad told. My dad told me Uncle Stanley would do everything he could to protect him. He was always there for him. He did things for my dad. My dad was growing up, you know. We talk about motorcycles and stuff, but one of the reasons motorcycles were so popular with my dad and his brothers because they were poor. And a motorcycle was a cheap piece of transportation that you could get together. And Uncle Stanley would help my dad with his little motorbikes and stuff. My Uncle Stanley was a lifelong lover of motorcycles. My dad used to tell me all these stories, and I had to go look it up to find out exactly what it was. But Uncle Stanley had this crazy-ass Kawasaki two-stroke street bike back in the 70s. And I had to look at it. It was called a Kawasaki Mach 4 H2. It was a 750cc two-stroke, dubbed the Widowmaker. What it kind of called? Because it didn't handle great, and it was incredibly powered, right? These things were, for those, you know, they weren't no Hayabusa like we got today, but those bikes were insane for the time period. And my dad said, Uncle Stanley loved it. Said his brother loved that Kawasaki. Boy, my dad told me he let him ride it one time. He said, third gear, he was going 100 miles an hour before he realized what happened. He had to slow that thing down, you know. It reminded me of the first time I rode a V65 Honda Magna. I felt the same way. Like, boy, I hit a squirrel, I'm done. One of the things Uncle Stanley did for my dad was on my dad's 16th birthday. And the family didn't have money and stuff. Wasn't a lot of gifts and stuff from his dad. But my Uncle Stanley bought my dad a brand new Remington 22 rifle. The very same gun that I learned to shoot on when I was a kid. My dad taught me how to shoot with that rifle. I have it in my gun case right now. My dad gave it to me a number of years ago. And I didn't find out until years after I had it that it came from Uncle Stanley, that my Uncle Stanley's one bought it, which makes it to me, and I have quite a collection of rifles and pistols. And aside from my mom's 9mm, that 22 Remington rifle, in my eyes, although not financially valuable, is the most valuable firearm I have, just because of the history tied to it. You know, guns are kind of like trucks, man. They get handed down, and they build these stories and these lives that come with them. And that was such a big deal. That was a lot of money back then. My dad was 16. See, he was born in 54. So 64, he was 10. So 1970, I don't know what that cost, but it was a pretty penny. That was other, you know, Uncle Stanley, for when I was a kid, a long time, he had gold wing motorcycles. He had a couple of them. He liked him gold, and he had them tricked out, buddy. He had all the radio on them and the fairing and the CB antenna and everything you could mount on a Goldwing motorbike, my Uncle Stanley had on there, man. You'd see him pull up. He was kind of a heavy set guy. He had a big, thick mustache. He always wore eyeglasses, but they were always tinted. So he always had these tinted eyeglasses, and they were kind of aviator style. And you see, here come Uncle Stanley, an old open face helmet, little visor on it, that Goldwing motorcycle, antennas and whatnot coming up all over it. Told you he wanted to be a truck driver like Papa, but, you know, as far as I know, he couldn't pass the hearing test. But he built models, and one of the models he liked to build a lot was he would build these beautiful 18-wheeler models, these semi-truck models. And he had them in his little trailer house when I was a kid, and you're a kid, you want to play with them. He wouldn't let you touch them. But they were beautiful. They were just these pristine, beautiful. I don't know what came of them, but they were beautiful. Man was talented. He was very, very talented. He could build and make beautiful things. There, a lot of time when I was a kid, there's a little grocery store right when you drove into Kilgore from Lever's Chapel on 42. and I've talked about before, Mr. Walden, at Mr. Walden's Grocery. Walden's Grocery. When I was a little kid, Uncle Stanley, I think he had worked there since he was in high school as a meat cutter in the butcher department. And so anytime me and my mom or me and my granny or me and Uncle Bobby went off in Walden's Grocery Store, there was Uncle Stanley behind the meat counter, and he'd always say hi to me and everything. It was, you know, that's that small town thing I talk about a lot, like where everywhere you go, you know somebody. And with my case, it was almost everywhere we went, somebody was family. He worked for Mr. Walden for a long time. I think right up until Mr. Walden closed that grocery store. He may have left a little bit before then. And at that point, my dad had his job over at WKM, working in the quality department. And I think maybe Uncle Stanley took some college classes in machining, or took a class in machining. I know he graduated high school, but I think maybe he took a college class in machining. He learned machining somewhere. And my dad, or maybe they trained him on the job. My dad got him a job working at WKM at that little plant, Kilgore, as a machinist. And he worked there a long time, you know. Whole time that little plant was there. And when WKM got sold to Cooper Industries and that plant got shut down and me and my family moved to Houston, Dad had a friend named Frank, I believe, had a little machine shop in Kilgore. This little small machine shop is right by the railroad tracks, right off Lantrip and North Longview Road area. Pretty close to the church we all went there. And Dad went over and talked to his buddy Frank, and his buddy Frank hired Uncle Stanley as a machinist over there at that little machine shop. And I don't know how many years Uncle Stanley worked there. It was a long time, though. I could tell you, he worked there. My meemaw died in October of 1995. And my meemaw and Uncle Stanley were inseparable. He was her baby, and he had these issues, and he was very close to his mother. And after she died, he kind of, you know, things went sideways for him, like a lot of us when we lose our homeland. He lost his homeland. Things went sideways for him, and all it was, you know. The story I heard at the time was that he'd sit there and churned out pristine parts for all those years. And then one day, everything that came off his machine was junk because he couldn't concentrate because his whole world was coming apart. And I think a lot of us can identify with that. Hell, even Elvis could. You read all the stories about Elvis. Boy, he came apart after his mama died. That's a big hit. I've told you about the ways I went off the rails after my mother died. But after Meemaw died, Frank had to let him go. After that, he just ran a paper route, like a lot of my family, for the Kilgore News Herald. He ran a paper route for years, that little pickup. I guess it wasn't too long after that. He got Papa's old truck, but then he ran a paper out in that truck. And at some point, due to his age, he was getting Social Security. And like all of them, when they sued Rainbow Bread Company for the bread truck driver that killed Meemaw in that car accident, Uncle Stanley got a nice little chunk of money, and it was enough for him to live. He lived right behind my meemaw. So my meemaw and Papa lived right on Highway 31. They had their little spread of land. But right behind them was another little plot of land, and that belonged to my great-grandma Barton and great-grandpa Barton, which was meemaw's parents. And Grandma Barton Grandpa Barton passed away before her, and then she lived, I think probably till I was like 4 or 5 years old. I think I was maybe 4 or 5 when she passed. My mom always told me the story. It was really hard. My dad was very close to her. He spent a lot of time with her as a kid. And after she passed, Stanley moved into her little, they had a little trailer house on that plot of land, a little shed back there, a little carport. And they cleaned that place up. Uncle Stanley moved in there. And that's where Uncle Stanley lived all the time I knew him as a kid. All the time I remember. And Uncle Stanley come to church every Sunday, put on a suit and come to church every Sunday. And Pentecost Church was kind of like a pirate ship, you know? If you were differently abled, they just figured out a way for you to participate. They didn't really, you know, that's a joke, was pirates was the best ablest ever. If you had one leg, well, we'll make you another one out of wood. We'll find you a job. You got one eye? We'll get you a patch. We'll find you a job. You know what I mean? It was just, that was kind of way our little church family was too back then. One of the elder men in the church was missing an arm. Nobody ever brought it up. Had a suit sewed up at the arm. Nobody ever brought it up. Just didn't matter. They would find some way for you to participate. Uncle Stanley was very much a part of that church. He came to that church every Sunday. He came to all the weddings. He came to all the stuff. He was there at every holiday. He was always involved. He had funny little quirks, man. He would just repeat stuff that he heard all the time. You know, it wasn't like sitting down and having a conversation with him. And as a kid, I didn't get what that was about. I just thought he was being funny. I've told y'all he used to sit there and go, nuh-uh. Yeah, anybody would say something in conversation, Uncle Stanley, nuh-uh. And if he wanted to talk to you, he'd reach over and kind of, he'd take his finger and he'd just kind of thump you on the leg. Pick at you a little bit. And then he'd say, how's school? You know, and you'd say something, he'd go, nuh-uh. Right? We just thought he was being funny. We would just argue back and forth with him. And he liked getting a reaction out of people. And the more he could stir you up, the more he'd grin. He'd drive my dad and his brothers crazy. They'd be telling some story, and Uncle Stanley start, nuh-uh. And they would just get red in the face, argue. Yes, that happened to Uncle Stanley. Nuh-uh. And just grinning behind them tinted sunglasses. Just grinning. And the bigger reaction he got out of them, the more he grinned. They'd get fed up and stop talking to him. I remember if you tried to hug Uncle Stanley, he didn't like that. He would go stiff as a board. He'd tighten his shoulders up and he would let you hug him, but you could tell he didn't want to hug you. He didn't like to be touched unless he instigated it. Go over there and poked at you, mess with you. And he was into whatever my papa was into. You know, he didn't do all the hunting and fishing. He did do a little bit of fishing, but my papa was really big into photography, and man, I remember Uncle Stanley always had these cool cameras. He always had the newest, coolest camera he could get. He was messing with cameras. He bought my cousin Shane a real nice camera for his graduation present. He was into the cameras and the photography, and he built the models. Okay, I don't remember anybody really getting along with him like my mom did, though. Mom, she didn't force him to hug her or anything like that, but she would always go sit by him and she would talk to him, and they would pick at each other, and she'd pat his hand, and he allowed that. And they just vibed. Him and my mom vibed. She used to tell me this really funny story. When her and my dad first got married, they had to live with me, mom, and papa for a little bit. My dad still wasn't out of the house and on his own. He was young, you know, early 20s. So when they first got married, they had to live with them for just a little bit in my dad's old room. And Uncle Stanley still lived there. And this is back in the 70s. This is when tampon commercials first started coming on the airwaves. Before that, there were no feminine products ever being advertised on television. This is around the time that first started, and they were all sitting in the living room. My papa was sitting in his big leather recliner. Meemaw was sitting on the couch, and they had a little couch and a little love seat. It wasn't a very big house. And Dad and Mom and Meemaw was sitting on a little couch. Uncle Stanley was sitting over there on the love seat. They were watching television. Sure, it was Gunsmoke, whatever Papa liked to watch. He liked to watch Rifleman. He liked watching Gunsmoke. And they were sitting there watching that television program, and my meemaw was very fundamentalist, religious. And my papaw was, you know, of an age where they, men didn't really know too much about women's feminine needs and such. You know, they just left that for the women. My mom, basically a teenager that just got married. She's very young. She's 17, 18. New to married, newly married, like fresh, brand new married. And they watch this television program, one of them tampon commercials comes on. And my mom told me, she said, I was already mortified. She goes, I was just sitting there trying not to be awkward and embarrassed in front of your meemaw and wondering what all she was thinking about this. And she said, Uncle Stanley looked over across there and goes, Sherry Kay, you need some of them? I'll run down to the store right now and get you some. My mom said she wanted to crawl right out of her skin and into that couch. And, of course, Dad was like, Stanley, what the, you know, what are you talking? Shut up, Stanley. Papa, boy, shut up, you know. And meemaw was just mortified. She can't even speak. Meemaw was so religious. One time she found out that we learned how to square dance in fourth grade. And she said, you know, dancing is just a secular thing. That's not something our people do. That's a sin against God. Told me that as a fourth grader, that I was sinning against God because I learned how to square dance. My other grandmother took me to a hoedown, and boy, meemaw was just fit to be tied. She couldn't believe somebody took a child to a hoedown. It was square dance and promenade, like a bunch of sinners. Pentecostals were strict, especially back in. They're a little different now, but boy, back in, they were something else. But that's kind of Uncle Stanley just like getting a reaction out of people. He loved that, boy. Years later, I'm an adult. It was after I started stand-up comedy. My dad had been up there doing something in Kilgore. He'd went over to see Uncle Stanley, and he was mortified because the floor in Uncle Stanley's trailer house was falling through in places. The old subfloor was just rotted out, and it's falling through in places, and he knew Uncle Stanley hadn't been well since my meemaw died. And by that point, my Papa Longmire had died. And Papa Longmire, for his abusive and calling him dummy, all that kind of stuff, kind of looked after Stanley too. But after Papa died, early 2000s, you know, my Uncle Larry and Aunt Barbara had three kids. They had all their own stuff going on, the kids getting married. Man, Linda and my Uncle Paul, they had their son and his wife and all their own stuff going on. My Uncle Gary and Aunt Paula lived out in Florida, and they would take Stanley out there for long periods of time, and he would stay with them, but then it would get to be too cramped. They had three kids, you know, it'd get to be too much. Uncle Stanley would come down to Houston, stay with us for a little while, stay with my mom and dad for a little while. My dad went up there, check in on him, and he saw that the floor of his trailer house was all messed up, and he couldn't He couldn't fathom his brother living like that. There was a big theory for years and years, or I was told all my life growing up, that my grandma Barton was a full-blood Cherokee Indian. I don't believe that to be true after doing Ancestry and Me or Ancestry.com, because I was trying to find out who my blood maternal grandfather was. And I don't have any Native American blood in me. Not that showed up on that test, is all I'll tell you. Showed up, I'm just about as white ever whited. I come from a group of crackers that were cracking around over in Scotland and Ireland. And some stuff happened, and they came over to Virginia, and they crackered around a little bit in Virginia, and then they crackered on down to Tennessee, and then they crackered on down to Texas. This is, it's not an exciting story. It's just, we're just, I have not found any evidence, but I was told my whole life, and I know, and I've done some research into it, and I found out that her dad, when she was a kid, lived on the reservation in Oklahoma. But I think the story behind him is he fought for the Union, and his family kind of shunned him for that. And so he shacked up with a gal on the reservation. I think his first wife had died, and he ended up living on the reservation for so long that she grew up speaking Szilagyi, which was the native language of Cherokee. So I think it's just some confusion. You know, it's every other redneck you meet will tell you they're 1/16 Cherokee. Like, but I know for years and years they were doing research trying to find or trying to get Uncle Stanley on the Dawes rolls, because they were going to try to get him some housing on a reservation, a little better health care and stuff like that. They were just trying to help him. My dad was trying to help him. But my dad goes up there, finds out the floor and his trailer's all messed up, and comes back home, and him and my mom call me. And I don't remember if I was staying with them at the time. I think I was still living in town in Houston. My dad says, "Do you think you and Joey go up there with me for a few days and help me fix the floor in his trailer?" I said, "Yeah, you know. Yeah, we'll do that." My dad and mom said, "We'll get a hotel room, get you guys a hotel room. And, you know, I'll pay for all the materials and stuff. And you'll come over here, help me load up all my tools, and we'll go up there and table saw and all that good stuff." Well, let's do this. I've already done some of that kind of work in my life. And Joey done a little bit of it. My dad done a mess of it. And it was a way he knew to help his brother. And I remember that week we went up there, and Uncle Stanley was a little weird about us being in his house and up in his business. You know, we had to tear up all the linoleum in the kitchen and redo all the floor. The kitchen was where it was the worst. It was all falling through in there. And we cut up 3/4-inch plywood, and me and Joey and my dad redid that floor. I think there was an electrical problem. Uncle Paul was an electrician. I think he came over and did some work on the place for it. He was always doing stuff for Uncle Stanley. He came over and did some work over there, electrical work. And we fixed this floor. We put all new subfloor in all the spots in that trailer that needed new subflooring. And we were going to go back up in a couple weeks and put down some new linoleum for him in the kitchen. Me and Dad had already done a lot of linoleum. So we was going to go up there. We was going to put all that new linoleum in the floor for him. And it got to be a week or two later. My dad called Stanley a couple times, and Uncle Stanley never called him back, never answered. My dad called his sister and said, "How you be heard from Stanley?" She said, "No, but sometimes he just does that. Sometimes he won't answer the phone. We try to check up on him, but sometimes he just does that." My dad told me he just had a bad feeling. He couldn't shake it. He called his other brother, and he was busy with all his own stuff. He couldn't get over there. And my Uncle Terry, my Aunt Robbie lived a little farther out at the time. They lived out in Sabine, out in Liberty City. And they all told him the same. They all, you know, or the stories I heard, they all just, you know, Stanley does that sometimes. Sometimes he wants to be left alone and don't answer the phone. There's a lot of intrusion in his personal life. Might have retreated from that a little bit. But they lived in the same town with, they've been dealing with him all these years, you know. It was different for them. My dad said he couldn't shake that bad feeling. So he decided he was going to take the day off work. I know it was a Friday. And he was going to drive up there and check on his brother and try to schedule a time for us to go up there, fix the rest of that floor. Four hours, 250 miles. My dad gets up that Friday, told me he had a sinking feeling, a bad feeling in his chest all day. Didn't sleep good. And he drove up there. Stanley wouldn't come to the door, but his pickup was in the driveway. Dad got the door open and went in there. And Uncle Stanley was sitting in his chair, and he had passed away. Coroner told him, basically, he just got out of the shower, wrapped in a towel, went and sat down in his chair, and he had a massive heart attack. And it killed him. But he'd been sitting there for days, you know, in a poorly air-conditioned trailer. And wasn't. If you've ever seen, I have, it's not good, you know. And people decompose. They don't look great, especially left unchecked. I can't imagine how bad it broke his heart that his older brother, the one that took care of him his whole life, and he was trying to take care of and help, died alone in that little trailer house. I know it was a Friday because I was doing shows at the, I think it was a Friday. I'm almost 100% sure. Because I was doing shows at the Laugh Stop on West Gray that night. That was after me and Rachel were already pretty tight. I think, let's see if I got the date here anywhere. I want to say it's like 2006. Yeah. All right. It's January 2006. Yeah. Me and Rach, that was kind of like at the very beginning of us. Remember, because I was on stage, my phone went off. It was in between the first and the, it was during the first show. We did two shows Friday nights. And my phone went off during the first show. And I didn't look at it. I just clicked it in my pocket while I was on stage. And then when I got off stage, I looked at it. It was my mom. And I'd already had a drink or two. It was in the middle of my Friday night. I'll call her back later. And I know she left me a voicemail. I said, well, I better check the voicemail. And I checked the voicemail. And she said, Jerry Wayne, I need you to call me. It's about your Uncle Stanley. And I could tell by the timbre of her voice and the pitch of her voice that it was the same voice that she called me at my friend's house one time telling me my grandmother had passed. Tell me to come home so they could tell me my grandmother had passed. So I knew something was up. So I called her immediately before the second show, and she told me. And she said, I'm really worried about your dad. He's in a bad way. I've never heard him like this. He's just completely heartbroken. And he's mad. And he feels like everybody abandoned. He's having a bunch of feelings. A bunch of feelings like you do when you lose somebody you love. Whether they're right or wrong, it doesn't matter. none of that really matters. All that matters was he was experiencing something. He had walked in his brother's house. He had found him deceased. And it was his guy that always looked out for him, that he was trying to help. We were about to go up there and finish putting that new floor in his house. Of course, my mom tells me, you know, your dad wants you to be a pallbearer. Look, grandsons are going to be pallbearers, just like we were for my meemaw. We've done that job a bunch of times before it was all over with. She says, so I want you to go up Gilroy with me. I had a suit that I was using for comedy. Bring your suit, go up there at Gilroy for me. Of course, tell Pete at the laugh stop, you know, my uncle died. I gotta go be a part of this. I gotta go be with my family. Of course, he told me something terrible. If I know Pete, I don't remember what it was, but I'm sure it was something awful. I'm sure he fired me. He used to fire me about once a week, so I'm sure he fired me over. And I hopped in I guess it's probably that little Ford Contour at the time, maybe that Hyundai. And I ran up to Kilgore. He'll be a pallbearer for my uncle. It seemed wild because we were just putting a floor in this place like a week ago. It always baffles me when people die and there's just like things left to be undone. Things left to be done. And Wop, you're no longer a resident of this garage, sir. Broke the contract. Sorry, I had to kill a bug. I think maybe I hang on to the fact if I leave enough stuff undone, Lord won't take me because I got stuff to finish, you know? Damn, you're a tough little booger. Too warm, all the creepy crawlies are out. That ought to do it. I'll get rid of one. Come another one. About time to bust out the little portable air conditioner in this shop. The bugs are getting too friendly with my lights here at night. I mean, I was shocked. But here's where I screwed up. So I told y'all before I cost myself my friendship with my cousin, little Paul. Because I did something really stupid and really shitty. But I was mad at him at the time. Because I don't remember if it was at my papa's funeral or something, but it's one of these things all the family had gotten together a couple years previous to this event. And I'd heard him making jokes. Calling Uncle Stanley, he was telling stories about Uncle Stanley, but he was calling him Uncle Retard. And I just didn't like it. I make jokes, I make fun of shit all the time, but I don't say stuff like that about people. I just didn't like it. It didn't sit right with me. And at a point of emotional vulnerability, because I was upset about my uncle, I said something to my father about not wanting to be a pallbearer because I didn't want to stand with my cousin who had called my uncle this thing. And I just didn't like it, and I was mad about it, and I didn't want to stand with him. I didn't want to walk with him. I didn't want to carry a casket with him. If I'm being honest with myself, I probably just didn't want to carry a casket, didn't want to be a part of it, because it was hard on me when I did it for my meemaw. I know it's supposed to be this great honor, but carrying your loved one's body across the cemetery field, it's not a fun job. So an emotional, messed up job. And it's sad. And there's, and I've done it a bunch. I've done it for all of my dad's brothers, except my Uncle Gary. I was not invited to his funeral. But, and that had nothing to do with that. It was just other family drama. Had nothing to do. Boy, these little moths are coming in here. I'm going to have to get in here with a bug spray. I should have never told my dad that, because my dad, in his emotional state, got upset and started a big fight with my Aunt Linda about it, about not wanting little Paul to be a pallbearer instead of me not being a pallbearer like I originally suggested. And stirred up a bunch of, it cost me my friendship, my relationship with my cousin. And that sucks. I stirred up a whole problem in my family because I was mad about this one little thing. That it was a different time, you know, that word didn't have the weight it has now. It was a different time. But I was just, it doesn't matter. I did this terrible thing, started this whole problem in my family, this huge fight between my dad and his sister. It took them years to get past it. Something I should have just kept my mouth shut about and just done the job. And I ended up being a pallbearer for Uncle Stanley, and we took him to his final resting place. And that was the end of it. I think we'll wrap it up right there before these bugs try to carry me off. Might do something about that. That's a new problem. Maybe sometimes when you know something like that, maybe just keep it yourself. I had no idea the kind of drama and the problems that was going to cause. And like I said, I lost a relationship with somebody I cared about very much. And I did, I do to this day love my cousin Paul very much. And I screwed that relationship up forever. And I regret it a great deal. I screwed up my relationship with my Aunt Linda and my Uncle Paul a great deal that we didn't resolve to any degree until my mother died and I saw them at the funeral. And I've told you all that story. I hadn't talked to them in years. And when I saw them at the funeral, we got past all that. Anyways, that's where we'll wrap it up. Let's do some testimonials. As I say, every time I see S10, I think about Uncle Stanley. That's who I think about. Just doing something silly. Messing with my dad. Drive my dad crazy. I remember when we did them floors, we was getting ready to leave to go back to Houston. And we were saying bye to Uncle Stanley. And my dad tried to hug Uncle Stanley. And Uncle Stanley did his suck his shoulders up, pull away from him. And my dad just grabbed him and hugged him and said, "Hug your brother. I love you. I'll be back in a couple weeks to finish your floors." I always wonder what else he would have said if he had known. He wasn't going to talk to him, you know? But let's do some testimonials. Who we got here? At Hillbilly Hijinks. These are comments from last week's podcast. Oh, it's where I talked about playing that mean prank, doing that dastardly thing with the spray paint. At Hillbilly Hijinks, the spray paint bomb is a mean trick for sure. I'm imagining how to use that basic gag for good and not evil, or at least more funny than evil. Use some water washable paints, all I can tell you, bro. Caught me an ass whooping. The one I had coming to me, I don't know if there's any way to use that gag for good, you know. I think that's one where when you need to cross the line, that's one you can use. And I, as Jerry Wayne Longmire Jr., I'm telling you, I don't think it's a good idea to use it, you know. Unless your ex-wife makes you really mad. Or, no, that's bad, you know. You better be ready to burn some bridges if you're going to use that prank. I'm not sure there's any good way to use that one. At Joey Ellis, KH. Oh, Joey, man, he's always in the chat. Good episode. My aunt had a new 82 charcoal gray Z28. I know what you mean about becoming an a-hole with those hot rods. Oh, yeah, that Trans Am Beta. I mean, I think I just had it in me, but boy, me and that old Trans Am. Boy, that was not my best self. Being a little too young, a little too cocky there. That'd get you in some trouble every time. That Trans Am did it to me, I'm sure. It's like, if you ever watch Christine, that dude turns into a little prick, too, once he gets Chris. He gets a little snotty, gets the girl, you get a little cocky. I don't know if it's just the car, but it's a lot of that combined. At Joe Pro 3388, another great episode, Mr. Longmire. I think the worst thing I did to someone else's truck. My best friend next door growing up had an absolutely gorgeous younger sister that had a tendency to date total a-holes. We never did any permanent damage, but we were known to siphon a bit of gas, loosen up distributor wires, and just maybe we tucked a bag of fish guts behind the hubcap. Well, that's diabolical right there. That is diabolical. I know of a story firsthand. I don't have time to get into it tonight, but I know of a story firsthand that involves some people taking a little bit of fish and putting it in the cabin air filter on somebody's air conditioner and just about ruined a really nice Denali pickup. It was an ex-wife, ex-husband situation. Diabolical. Behind the wheel's a little better. It just stinks around the car. But whoo, there's something about fish guts. They get a smell to them. Thank you guys for commenting. I always appreciate the comments. I look forward to reading them every week. Of course, I always look forward to being here in the chat with you guys. Let's wrap this thing up for these flying ants. I thought these were moths. They are flying ants, which is, yay. That's a fun evolution. The other thing I know now, and it occurred to me many years later, was that my Uncle Stanley was autistic. He was neurodivergent. Nobody knew what to do with that back then. You know, pretty much anybody who wasn't abled 100% or whatever, they just stuck them off. They didn't know what to do with them. There wasn't a lot of research into that kind of stuff. You know, you see the meme, you see the joke all the time. I've made jokes about how, you know, people claim, well, it didn't used to be all this autism, you know. It did, just nobody knew what it was, you know. It's not a new thing. And I believe 100% Mom Stan's autistic. I don't know about the falling out of the truck bed when he's 2 years old. I don't know anything about that. But what I do know is that I have a very young son who exhibits so many similar traits who I know is autistic. My son does not like a lot of physical affection unless he initiates it. Oftentimes you try to hug him, he pulls away from you. My son communicates a lot, and there's another word, there's echolalia, and then there's another thing, but a lot of repetitive stuff. Loves to get a reaction out of you. If he can get a reaction out of you, screwing with you. Damn these bugs. I guess it's just, you know, I wish I knew then what I know now about how to communicate and I'm still learning the ropes, you know. Luckily, we have a lot more information at our fingertips these days than we used to back then. But it makes me wish even harder that my mom was around, because I think her and my little boy would be like peas and carrots. Because she clearly had a knack with my Uncle Stanley, and she knew how not to pester him and how to move at his pace and communicate with him and have a good time with him. You know, what I didn't know was his whole life he wanted everybody to call him James. I didn't know that. And they never did. They all called him Stanley. But my dad found a letter that my Uncle Stanley had wrote and not put in the mail yet to him and my mom, saying, "Hey, y'all, I think it's about time for me to come on down to Houston for a little bit and hang out with you guys." And he had signed the letter, "Love, James." But knowing how she was, how my mom was with Uncle Stanley, makes me wish she was around even more, because I think her, my youngest, her and I think they would just be peas and carrots. And God forbid anybody that said anything about it, she would probably bring hellfire around to them. But she didn't like nobody messing with Stanley either. I still don't like that word. And I'm not one of these people, "Oh, you can't say this, you can't say that." Whatever you choose to say in your personal life is on you. What you choose to say and how you choose to act, that's on you. That's the decision you got to make. I believe in free speech, but to me, it means free to deal with the consequences of your speech. No, I'm not going to fight somebody. Well, if somebody said that word regarding my kid, you better know that there's a demon in me that's going to come out, and it's not going to be pretty. And granted, you can't control what people say on the internet, and I don't care to. I just, people are being ugly, I get rid of them. I don't like negative people around me. But there's a lot of things that I said when I was younger that I wouldn't say now. There's a lot of words that ain't in my vocabulary anymore. And some of that is just wisdom of age and learning what things hurt people. And I don't like hurting people. But I can promise you that, I can promise you this about that word. I'm not going to start problems with anybody. I know people use that word colloquial. They use that word for a lot of things, but somebody who uses that word to describe people is not someone I'm ever going to have a lot of respect for or a meaningful friendship with. It's just going to be impossible for me because of what that word means to me and the way I feel about it. And I believe that not only the things we do, but the things we say and the language we use defines us. Especially as men. I believe it's harder to be a strong, kind man than it is to be a strong, ugly person. I believe it's harder to be a gentle, kind man than it is to be a rough, mean, strong person. I believe those things take more work. I believe it's a worthy goal. I strive be better than I was the day before. And I strive to make sure the things I do don't actually hurt people. I may make fun of somebody's pickup and make jokes, but try not to hurt people. That's not in my interest. Thank you guys for sharing your Sunday with me. I don't know if there's anything to pick apart from this one. I just wanted to tell y'all the story of Stanley. He was a character, and he's one of those people that affected who I am. I'm rooting for you guys. I always am. Thank you so much for the car donations. Remember, you don't need to donate the cars to me. You can just donate them on the day of giving in October. You can just do your own donation. I'm not looking for any glory. I just wanted to be a part of the DrivenDreams.org charity. I thought it was a lot of fun to be a part of. I just want to be a part of it. Thank you for the donations. I promise you I'm going to make a big deal about it. I know you're not doing it for that, but I'm going to keep your name alive while I make these donations. I'm keeping a list of everybody everybody that's involved. And Mr. Mertens that sent this big box. We found out he sent two boxes. The other one just hasn't arrived yet. So he sent us 100 smiles for kids, and I think that's pretty amazing. Guys are out and about in the United States. I know some of my listeners are overseas, but the Diamond Gym Summer Tour is kicking off. And I'm going to try to go as many places as I can. Colorado, I'm going to Colorado Springs and Fort Collins. June 19th and June 20th. June 19th, I'm going to be in Fort Collins. June 20th, I'm going to be in Colorado Springs. I'm going to show at the Burleby. June 19th, I'm going to be at the Comedy Fort, Fort Collins, Colorado. If you go search my name and Jerry Wayne Longmire, Linktree, you can get tickets to all my shows. I'm doing two shows at the Houston Punchline, July 5th. Headline two shows at the Houston Punchline Comedy Club. I'd love to see a big turnout for that here in my home city. I've got shows in San Antonio in July, July 18th and 19th. I'm at the Upstage Comedy Lounge in San Antonio. I got shows in Macomb, Mississippi in November 19th. I'm coming back home to East Texas. I'm being Gladewater, Texas in September. And we're constantly adding shows to the list, trying to put this little run, this little tour together. You live somewhere you want to see me, please send us an email. If you know somebody has a brewery or a place where we can set up a show, even better. Something we can sell tickets to and try to make a little money while I'm on the road. Even better. I'm rooting for you guys. I appreciate all the support you give me. It means more than I could ever put in words. And remember, when you're out there in your life and you're going through your life and you're doing things, the things we say define us. I've talked before about how the things we say matter to people more than we realize. Well, things people say to you matter more than you realize, too. We all probably got some triggers and stuff we don't like to hear. And that's probably because you heard it used in an ugly way towards somebody you loved or yourself. So just remember that. Root for you. There's room at the table for all of us. I think there's a pathway for all of us to enjoy this ride. And I want to see you guys do it. I want to see you slide through obstacles like Teflon. Hope you're making your way through all the things in your way this week. And so glad to see you and talk to you. See you next week. Remember, I'm JW. I love you. Come at all these flying ants. You can catch a mess of them in that big old hat, though.